Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today Vanessa Ugarte. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and what a beautiful way of saying Ugarte.
Vanessa, for the benefit of people that haven't come across you, just tell us a bit about your areas of expertise.
My expertise with clients right now is enabling them to really take charge of what they're doing, take charge of their businesses and their lives for that matter. I get paid what they're worth and create a really beneficial life-work balance.
And you specialize in professional services and accountants particularly. What was the stimulus that brought you into professional services? I guess it's critical that they charge what they're worth, is it? Was that the stimulus?
The way it happened was that I was meeting accountants and lawyers and other professional services people in networking, because there's always an abundance of those sorts of people there. It marries up very well with what I do, because clearly they do sell their time for money.
But when you look at them as a breed, they are super technically smart. They've studied forever. They've got letters after their name. But how coachable are they in taking on new ways of thinking and some of the confidence and self-worth stuff that you teach them?
It's important that people are open-minded, because when you're coaching people, from my perspective, I need to know that those people that I'm working with are going to do their part as well. Because it's not about waving a magic wand and suddenly everything's changed. That person has to be willing to take some new actions, and that could be challenging for people. So I don't think coaching is for everybody. There has to be some open-mindedness, even if the person's never had coaching before, or else they've got to a point where their pain is so great and somebody like myself happens to appear at the right time, and then they have a bit of an awakening, if you like, and think, actually, I do need help, and they're willing to say, I need help. So I think you've got different types of people.
Well, accountants and lawyers and their ilk, they've been taught, they've studied exams and everything else, but they do need to be coachable, because the learning doesn't stop when you get a certificate to practice. And it was Eric Hoffer that said the mark of an educated person is the degree to which they're willing to let go of old ways of thinking and embrace new ways of thinking. So when you talk about clients that are sometimes a fit for you and some that aren't, they've got to be willing to take action, willing to learn new things and even let go of things. Would that be right?
Absolutely. I'm a great believer in lifelong learning. I'm probably a relentless self-developer and self-improver. Yeah. I can't see a time when that wouldn't be for me. Not everybody thinks like that, but I think with what's just happened in the last few months, then we are all being pushed to be willing to evolve and grow and develop. And I don't think it's something you can just say, well, I'll do that once and then that's it.
Mm. So let's get into charging what you're worth. Why is that so important for somebody in professional service?
It's important for a number of reasons. When people don't charge what they're worth, it means they're probably undercharging or discounting or overservicing clients. And that causes not just a shortfall in revenue, but also it means people are often running around like headless chickens, working way too hard for too little. And that creates its own health issues, both physical and emotional. So people can become more stressed because they're not working as they should be with clients. People can get very resentful about their clients, even though it's the accountant who has created that scenario. Nevertheless, they feel resentment, and it's quite an uncomfortable and negative energy to experience. Mm. So for me, from where I'm coming from, the importance of charging what you're worth is about being able to create that balance in your life.
If accountants own their own business, you can appreciate they can set their own fees in a way. But if they perhaps work for somebody else, those hourly rates are set for them. So they have to fit into that. If they feel they're not worth what they're told to charge, that can present problems. And if they're maybe even undercharging for what they're doing, that can present problems, can't it?
Yes, and actually some of the work I do is on making sure people are applying the correct charge out rates. You're very right to say that if somebody is an employed person who's doing the work and they can't identify with their charge out rate because they think it's very high, then that will be what will cause them to be discounting or over-servicing clients. If they think it's too low perhaps they need to be looking for a firm where they do actually value people's work and change firms, or indeed have the confidence to be able to have that discussion with their boss to say, look, I'm not feeling that it's high enough for the work that we're doing. But it's probably more often the other way around, I would say, when it comes to people who are employed. For example, if somebody is on a certain hourly rate and then they get a promotion, that's where something can be a challenge for them. And so therefore their rate goes up quite considerably. Mm. And often I find that people who are employed have what I call an employee mentality. So they're comparing their charge out rate with what they're paid as a salary. And there's quite a gap because they don't really understand or they don't really think about the running costs of a business. And so that's where the challenges can come, particularly if they're either new into work or they've been promoted. And then obviously that means that they've jumped up in terms of what they're charging.
Yeah. You touched on earlier, Vanessa, a little bit about what happens when firms don't charge what they're worth. But what are some of the problems that a firm will come across if their employees are not fulfilling those charge out rates?
What are the firms actually doing about it? Are they addressing those challenges? Do they understand why the person is not doing that? Because it's usually an emotional reason. It's not because they're not intelligent or that their work isn't good. It's because they don't feel confident in being able to charge those prices. So they'll do whatever they can as a human being to move away from what makes them feel uncomfortable. And so that's why they'll do the over-servicing or the undercharging. But also it's, you know, what are the firm doing as a whole? Are they working with the sort of clients who actually value them, or are they just taking any old clients who really are looking for cheap and cheerful? And what I found is that they'll always have some that are really category D clients that they should get rid of. But sometimes there's a reluctance to do that. There's a reluctance to have to say to somebody, either I'm going to put your fees up or you need to go and find somebody else. Mm. At least that's been my experience. There's a lack of confidence in having those conversations. So if the business owners lack confidence around it, their staff are likely to have those problems. And even if the business owners don't themselves have a problem, if they lack confidence in being able to talk to their employees about how they should be charging, they're not quite sure how to do that. Sometimes what I find is people avoid those problems rather than actually dealing with them. One of the big things I've seen across the professions is underestimating. You know, when you're doing, for example, a fixed fee, underestimating is really, really commonplace. And I think part of that is because we all have a tendency to underestimate how long it will take us to do something, regardless of whether it's a work thing or something else.
Yeah.
And I remember I was on a course some couple of years ago, I think, and one of the things the guy said was, things always take longer than you think. So now I keep saying to myself, okay, if something's going to take longer than I think, that's okay, I can plan better. And I can also not be so impatient about getting something done, because it does take longer without getting into procrastination. So I think underestimating is a natural common problem that we all have. Then if there's confidence thing mixed up in it, people could be underestimating for that reason as well, because they don't want to say what the fee is. So if you're doing a fixed fee, that's bigger than saying an hourly rate, isn't it? So there is some psychology in this. And therefore, there might be a tendency for the person to think, well, I'll say a bit less. Or it could even be unconsciously they're saying less. Mm. I think there's always an element of confidence, but it isn't just confidence. Also, perhaps not thinking about scope creep,
yeah,
and not communicating about that. So we all know when dealing with people that scope creep can happen fairly easily, or people change their mind about what they want. And
well, you want to over-service the client and provide value, don't you? But that means you're doing more work.
Absolutely. I always use this example as a really simple one, nothing to do with accountants. But if you take your car to the garage for its yearly service,
yeah,
and they charge you whatever they charge you for the service, then they will ring you up and say to you, oh, I found this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. This is what it's going to cost you. Would you like me to go ahead? You don't say, no, I'm just going to come and get the car. You say, yeah, go ahead and do it, because you know it needs to be done. They don't hesitate to do that. But what happens often with professional services is that they don't do that. They do extra work. They don't actually communicate that with the client. They certainly don't warn them about it. And therefore, when it gets to billing, which often occurs afterwards anyway, they just think, well, we didn't tell them that. So either we don't bill it, or if we do bill it, we bill it at a reduced rate. Because there's also that discomfort of having to have the conversation with the client.
Yeah. So when we look in the Vanessa Ugarte Dictionary of Life and Business, and we see the term self-worth, What exactly does that mean to you?
Self-worth to me is how one perceives oneself, and it doesn't just have to be financially at all. So the thinking that people have about themselves is, a lot of it is unconscious, most of it's unconscious actually, and it's habitual. So people will be saying the same things in their heads, you know, the monkey mind or the self-talk that goes on all the time. And so they get to believe it. And I was talking to somebody the other day about imposter syndrome, which is a lovely phrase that we hear all the time these days. Mm. And to me, imposter syndrome and a lack of self-worth are very, very connected, if not the same thing. But somehow or another, the phrase imposter syndrome seems to be acceptable as a label that you can put on. And that
just explain that to people that might not know what that means, Vanessa.
Imposter syndrome is usually when people don't think that they're good enough to be where they're at in their position, and there's a fear that people will find them out, and it's really commonplace. And I think the higher up people go, the more potential there is for this imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
So self-worth is about the way we think. You know, some of it is the way we've been thinking a long time, right from back from childhood. What we think about ourselves is often just incorrect. And if it's negative, it's not a good thing.
So make the link for us between what we charge and how we feel about ourselves.
Well, people who don't feel so good about themselves will charge less. There's big fears that we have as human beings, right? And one of the fears is the fear of rejection.
Yeah.
And I think that is partially ingrained in us because the subconscious mind is actually hardwired for fear to keep us safe. So going back to caveman days, you know, if we were confronted with a saber-toothed tiger or woolly mammoth, for example, we'd need to get the hell out of there. If we didn't have this response reaction of fear, we'd be standing there not realizing we needed to run away. But the challenge we have now, because we have replaced those original real physical fears with imaginary fears, yet the response we have in the body and the mind is exactly the same thing. It's one of fear.
So how do you feel about the whole timesheets versus value pricing debate? Are timesheets good for accountants because they provide structure, or is value pricing better where it's a bit more subjective?
I don't necessarily think it's either or.
Right.
I think it can be a combination. I mean, some jobs take a long time to do, but the value may not be that great, but it's a necessity.
Yeah, like audit work, for instance, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a necessity. So it will take a certain amount of time, and therefore you can't get that time back. And clearly people only have a certain amount of time in the day. But then there are other situations where the value is great, but the amount of time it takes because of the person's expertise might be quite low. And I suppose that the best example I've got of that is to do with tax. And it's a true story. He worked for one of the big four, and then he left and worked for a much smaller firm. And one day he got contacted by an ex-client from this previous firm saying to him, help, help, I've got this problem. You know, I've got £100,000 tax bill from HMRC. Can you help me? Can you help me? And my contact, let's call him John, said, yeah, let me just take a look at the stuff. I won't charge you for having a look at it, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. And he took a look at the information. He thought, yeah, I can get this solved, bearing in mind that nobody in that big four organization could solve it, which of course shall remain nameless for obvious reasons. And so he did some looking at it, and he went back to him and he said, yeah, I should be able to solve this problem for you. I don't see that there'll be a problem. I'll do it on a commission basis. I'll charge you 10,000. And the chap said, absolutely no problem. Go ahead and solve it for me, please. You know, he was desperate. So he solved it. He told me it didn't take him very long, a few letters, but he had 30 years experience.
Yeah.
And it was the 30 years experience, of course, that helped him solve the problem, but it didn't take him long to do. But the value to the client was they saved £90,000. So it's very obvious, isn't it, that that is something that you can do. And yet, does everybody do that? Does everybody have the confidence to be able to say that to a client and then do that? Of course, if he'd not succeeded, he wouldn't have charged the client. So it was a win-win for everybody, really.
Yeah. So what do you think is the biggest problem that accountants have in relation to charging?
It might be discerning compliance from value-added or business advisory, because I think, of course, they know what is compliance and they know what is advisory, but it's very easy, particularly for those who've got smaller businesses as their clients, to do a fixed fee for the compliance work, shall we say, and then the clients will say, well, can you just do this for me? And they find themselves doing it and not charging. That's a story that's coming into my head of somebody I worked with who used to do just that. He was late 40s, fully qualified chartered accountant. All his clients were small businesses paying fixed fee for compliance work. And then they would ring up and say, oh, can you have a look at my cash flow forecast or fill in this mortgage application form? And he'd say yes before he had a chance to think.
Yeah.
And even if he did, it would go along the lines of, well, I'm not really doing any work, because in his mind, doing work was some crunching numbers. And so he'd do it without charging. So that's one challenge. The other challenge is when somebody just asks a question and the person can answer it really simply and they don't think about it. It's just an automatic response. And we're all capable of doing that no matter what our profession. They can just be giving away valuable information and not actually recognizing that that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that then becomes a habit, doesn't it? And they're doing it all the time and they don't see it, because it's difficult for us as an individual to really understand our own value unless we spend some time consciously looking at it, because the value that you have, the value that I have, the value that accountants have is usually born out of a long period of time and it's become unconsciously competent, and so they take it for granted.
And this is hard for them to solve themselves, because in a way they're too close to the problem, aren't they? So they would then reach out to somebody like you. And how typically might you start working with them, Vanessa?
The experience I have now, I know that in a certain period of time, given that that person has certain challenges that need solving and that they are a certain personality type that I think are going to get good results, I can pretty well determine how long it will take for me to get the results with them, not for them, with them, for them to be able to change those behaviours, implement new behaviours and get comfortable implementing those new behaviours, so they become embedded new behaviours rather than, oh, well, I'll just try this and then I'll go back to my old ways.
And it's tough for them to do it themselves, because they might be railing with all kinds of inner demons, or their upbringing and their self-worth, or they might be reeling against culture and people higher up that are telling them to do things. And that's quite intimidating for people like accountants, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, none of us really is very good at seeing our own blind spots. You know, that's why they're called blind spots, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you've got somebody who actually can recognize what is going on and bring that to the light, make that clear and help people then communicate this stuff with clients, and then the confidence to be able to do it. So going back to that story I was just telling you, I started off then on a strategy for how to manage those phone calls, because he was in an automatic behavior of just giving the answers. I had to stop him from doing that and say, right, let's come up with a strategy together. Really simple strategy, nothing complicated. We came up with a strategy of how to manage those calls. And of course it meant him doing something different. And when you do something new or different, it's likely you will feel a bit uncomfortable, because that's normal. But it's getting comfortable going through that process of being uncomfortable and then seeing the wins you get. And of course, that then builds the confidence.
Yeah.
And after a period of time, you know, he was doing that naturally. And the great thing was he never lost clients doing it.
Yeah.
So the big fears of losing clients, being rejected, is what often keeps people stuck in the old behaviours they have.
So this is great, Vanessa. If people want to find out more about what you're doing, get in touch with you, and maybe even look up your book called True Worth, which I know is on Amazon, what is a good way for them to reach you?
They can reach me through the website, www.thetrueworthexpert.com, or through LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Vanessa Ugatti in the world.
I think you are. That's great. And in closing, Vanessa, just give some words of encouragement and advice to the accounting professionals listening who are resonating with what you're saying and feeling, you know what, I am not comfortable with what I'm charging. I do want to get more confident. What would you say to them?
Come and talk to me. You know, if you recognize that, this is the first step to transformation. You can't change without recognizing there's something needs changing. So just come and have a conversation with me.
Yeah. And a little bit of money spent now on coaching would reap benefits for the rest of their working lives, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Because once you have those changes, you can replicate that year in, year out.
Yeah. You can see why that's good for the individual and it's good for the firm as a whole.
And also in terms of how you feel about yourself and the impact it has on other areas of your life. So that's what I find. People don't just change in the work environment. They change externally as well. And that's so positive.
Well, Vanessa Ugatti, that's been really inspiring. Thank you so much for your time today.
Fantastic. Lovely. Thanks very much, Rob. Much appreciated.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.